From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill on The Miracle Hunter. Well, I'm so excited in today's episode. We'll be talking with Father Tom Gibbons, the executive producer of Fighting Spirit, a film about Venerable Father Emil Capon. And we'll be speaking with Dr. Matthew Bunsen about his brand new book, Leo XIV, Portrait of the First American Pope. We, like everybody else out there, have been talking a lot about this first American Pope, a Chicagoan, and I'm a Chicago guy myself, so I'm extra excited to be speaking with Dr. Matthew Bunsen about his very first biography about Pope Leo XIV, so very excited for that. And check out my series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, on Saturday, June 14th at 5 p.m. Central Time. My episode on Walsingham airs, and I explore the miraculous apparition of Our Lady of Walsingham, who revealed plans for the Holy Family's house in Nazareth to a Catholic English noblewoman. In my other series, They Might Be Saints, the next episode comes out on June 25th at 10:30 p.m. Central Time, and that's the episode on Bishop Alphonse Gallegos. He strolled the streets of Sacramento saving souls by visiting families and mixing with lowriders in the Latino community. I profiled the Bishop of the Barrios, Alphonse Gallegos, and that was one of my absolute favorite episodes to film. Check out my pilgrimage coming up, Jubilee Year Pilgrimage to Milan, Turin, Florence, and Rome, and it'll be from July 28th through August 4th. And that will, like we always do, we'll be going to places of saints and miracles. We'll visit the Duomo in Milan and visit Turin to see the Cathedral of St. John the Baptist, where the Shroud of Turin is held, and walk in the footsteps of Pier Giorgio Frassati and see the place where St. John Bosco had his famous visions. And we'll continue to Genoa to see the apparition site of Our Lady of the Guard, and go to Lucca to see the shrine of St. Gemma Galgani, one of the great miracle-working saints. We'll go to Florence to see the home of many great artists, and of course, we'll see the David, as well as the site of an apparition of the Virgin Mary to the seven holy founders of the Servites. And we'll finish up in Rome to see the many incredible sites around the Vatican. Check out more and sign up at pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter. Later in the show, we're going to be looking at the Might Be Saint of the Day, like we always do, the Blessed Francisca de Paula de Jesus Isabel from Brazil, who lived in the year 1810 to 1895. In the 365 Days with Mary Project, Our Lady of the Arbor from Lille in France in the year 1234. The question of the week, how can I get my miracle story published? I'll try to answer that one. And the miracle of the day, a healing attributed to Venerable Giuseppina Suriano that happened on this date, June 14th, in the year 1992. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we talk about trivia questions. I personally love trivia. You might catch me in a bar playing pub trivia on some random night, but this is Catholic Pub Trivia. Last week's question, what saint is associated with the face of Christ, the image of Edessa? And that is St. Jude. And King Angbar of Ardessa is the one who was healed with that image of the face of Christ as brought by St. Jude. In this week's question, we're talking about Father Emil Capon in the new film Fighting Spirit. And he was the most recently declared venerable from the United States, and he lived in the state of Kansas. The question is, are there any other venerables, blesseds, or saints who lived in the state of Kansas? If you think you know that question and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and the fastest winner will win that prize, and answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Father Tom Gibbons, the executive producer of the film Fighting Spirit, about Father Emil Capon. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to The Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who follow this show know that we love talking about future American saints. And I've got my series, They Might Be Saints, that features Americans on the path to sainthood. And we're talking about servants of God, venerables, blesseds, before they have all their miracles and are declared saints by Rome. And I believe the most recently declared venerable in our Catholic Church here in the United States is Father Emil Capon, or Capon, as some people may call him. And there's a brand new film that's out. It's available for digital download anywhere. Anything digital can be downloaded. And we're so excited about this film. It's called Fighting Spirit, and it features the story, or it is the story, of Father Emil Capon. And we're so excited today to be joined by the executive producer of that film, and that's Father Tom Gibbons. Welcome to the program today, Father Gibbons.
Oh, thanks so much, Michael. Appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, no, I think that it's such an interesting and unique story. And anytime we have Americans who advance along the path to sainthood, I think a lot of people take notice because it's the idea that there were people here who lived here and who are living here who can be recognized by the Church as saints. They're not just some far off land, but from our own soil. And so the story of Father Emil Capon is a captivating one. What made you get involved with this production, Fighting Spirit?
Well, what happened is the production started when the president of the Paulist Fathers, Mike Sullivan, this was a film he'd wanted to do for a long time. And we started talking about 7 years ago. And it was a film, and he really wanted to do something about military chaplains. At Paulist Productions, we our kind of motto going forward is we create media that advances the conversation between the sacred and the secular. And we bring forth a Catholic voice to that conversation, but all people are welcome to the table. So we're always looking for stories that will be accessible to everybody, in which, you know, we can all kind of come together and explore faith and explore religion and share a little bit about Catholicism while learning about other faith traditions. And so when Mike Sullivan started talking about this idea, it just seemed completely in line with what our mission at Paulist Productions has been really for the past 65 years and all the various different medias that we've put out. And what happened was we had a whole bunch of different stories, and Father Emil's story was one of those stories about how brave he was and how selfless he was in ministering to his fellow POWs in North Korea during the Korean War. And then in the midst of us doing interviews and starting to put the film together, we heard that Father Emil Capon's remains had been identified. And I think they were identified in 2021. And so it was one of those things where we had already started working on his story was going to be part of a lot of other stories. But when that news came forward, we were just like, wow, there's something going on here that they just identified the remains. And so the film, in addition to all of the other amazing examples of heroism and of service and of grace that these combat chaplains, serve their nation and their country with every day and their soldiers, this one kind of rose to the top because it was not only an old story, but had become recently a topical story with the finding of his remains.
Absolutely. And the recent declaration that he is a venerable makes it even more interesting for American Catholics.
Absolutely.
We're talking today with Father Tom Gibbons, the executive producer of the film Fighting Spirit, about the life of Father Emil Capon, or Capon. And I'm going to ask you about that in a minute here, what the correct pronunciation is. But how does somebody go into becoming a military chaplain? How does somebody get assigned to that, as in the case of Father Emil?
Well, it's something that they have to volunteer for. And so, I can speak as a Catholic priest who is not a military chaplain. I'm lucky if I can run 3 miles, let alone the 20 miles, I'm sure, that everybody in the military has to run. But it's one of those things where it's very much of a calling. And so for a priest, you would be incarnated through the archdiocese of the military. And so basically you're saying, I want to be a priest And on top of that, or along with that, I wish to serve in this particular realm, in the military realm, by serving as a chaplain. And the archdiocese and the military, of course, would take care of all the Catholic priests. But then there's the department, the chaplaincy department within the U.S. military that takes care of all of the different faith traditions. So Jewish, you know, different Protestant denominations, Buddhists, you know, Muslim, all these different ministers to make sure that our soldiers are being taken care of on an emotional and a spiritual level.
Amazing. We're talking today with Father Tom Gibbons, the executive producer of Fighting Spirit, the film about Father Emile Kippon, military chaplain. And I guess the question for me is that, of course, we have this path to sainthood now established by Pope Francis, this oblatio vitae, the free will offering of one's life. And there have clearly been many military chaplains who have gone into battle and given up their lives in some way or another in helping their fellow countrymen. What is it about Father Emile Kippon that we look at his life of heroic virtue that allowed him to be recognized by Rome?
Well, I think he was, you know, it's the one thing that's really amazing about all these combat chaplains, because you can be a military chaplain and not necessarily be a combat chaplain, but it's the combat chaplains who go on the front lines without a weapon and serve those, you know, who are being shot at, like in literally the most vulnerable and dangerous situations. They are right there, you know, they're not hanging back. And the degree to which Father Kippon put himself out there was serving as a non-combatant, but also just, you know, making sure he stayed with his men all the way through, I think is, and it's the story of so many combat chaplains, of course, but I think that is one of the things, and all of his writings just show what a holy person he was, what a faithful person he was. The other thing is, so many of the prisoners of war who survived that horrible death camp, that horrible prison camp, when they came back, they all said, Father Kippon kept us alive. Like, even when he died, like, it was his spirit, it was his care. And I think that's just been very hard to ignore, without taking anything away from other military chaplains. And I understand some other military chaplains are up for canonization who have served as Catholic priests.
That's right. And in the film Fighting Spirit, you're the executive producer of that film. Mm-hmm. Talk about some of the scenes that you put in that film that sort of portrayed that care, that attention, that taking it to the next level that Father Emile did when he served in the military.
Well, it was, you know, what he did was there was a young soldier was being asked to resupply the front lines with munitions, and Father Kippon volunteered to go with him. And that it was him volunteering to go with him with that soldier about, like, you know, even when they were being shot at, you know, Father Kippon was saying, hey, we got a mission to do, keep moving forward. That we told that story. We told the story. And then in the midst of that battle, there was a soldier who was going to be when the battle was over and all the soldiers were being captured and marched off to a prison camp. There was a soldier who had a bad leg injury. So Father, he was about to be shot, and Father Kippon pushed the North Korean soldier out of the way to spare his life. And then basically carried this wounded soldier who otherwise would have been killed on the spot, but carried him so that he wouldn't be shot. So there's all these small examples of him just going above and beyond, like big examples, small examples, coming in and, you know, stealing tobacco and sharing it from the prisoner, you know, from the wardens of the prison, to kind of bring some small tobacco to keep the prisoner's spirits up, to lead the prisoners in song. There's just all these things. But the larger film also, I think, shares all these other stories of so many other chaplains who had the same spirit of Father Kippon and had that same you know, that same sense of sacrificial love and standing up for what's right, that I think really celebrates not only Father Kippon, but really all of those who, you know, who enter into this very dangerous, but very worthwhile ministry.
Amazing. The film's name is Fighting Spirit, and it's from Paulus Productions. We've been talking today with Father Tom Gibbons about Father Emil Capon, who is now a venerable in our Catholic Church. For those people who are interested in this film and want to find out more, what's the best place that they can go?
What they can do is it is now available for rent or digital purchase wherever you get your movies and documentaries and films. It's available on Apple. It's available on Amazon Prime. It's available on Google Play, YouTube, Fandango, most any place you can purchase. It's a moving film. We just did a screening for a pilgrimage in Wichita, Kansas. We did an outdoor screening for them and where Father Capon is from. And there really wasn't a dry eye. You know, the stories will move us. And I know as a priest who has not served in the military, it's just such inspiring witnesses of ministry and serving the Lord by serving God by serving God's people. I really encourage everyone to check it out.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Father Tom Gibbons, for being the producer of this film, Fighting Spirit, from Paulus Productions. Check that one out anywhere digital downloads can be done. And we're so grateful for you joining us on today's program.
Thank you so much, Michael. Appreciate it.
God bless. That was Father Tom Gibbons, executive producer of Fighting Spirit, that film about Father Emil Capon, the Venerable, from Kansas, the military chaplain. A truly amazing story, and we'll be following his path along towards becoming a saint. So check that one out anywhere anything can be digitally downloaded. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And I love getting your questions over email. I have a pretty interesting or strange email inbox, but I love getting those questions in person as well when I give a talk and I travel around the country, maybe give 20 talks a year at different Catholic shrines or parishes or conferences. And I always talk about miracles, of course, and I might talk about Marian apparitions or Eucharistic miracles or how the Catholic Church investigates the supernatural. But to have me speak at your parish, you can have me if you go to miraclehunter.com and click on the contact tab, you send me a message that way, and who knows, maybe I'll be speaking at a parish in your area sometime soon. So I got an interesting question this past week. Dear Miracle Hunter, I had a miracle happen to me, the appearance of an image of the Virgin Mary on a stone. I want to publish the news of the appearance of this miraculous stone on a religious TV channel, a religious blog, or a religious newspaper. How can I do that? Thank you, Ahmed. Well, thank you, Ahmed, for your question, and it's an interesting one. I do get some emails into my email inbox where people report various miraculous healings and other phenomena that happen, including images appearing on objects. In this case, thank you for sending me your images of the Virgin Mary on a stone. It's quite interesting. I do have to mention that in the history of the Catholic Church, we've seen very, very few approvals, if any, related to a naturally occurring image on an object, such as a tree or other, you know, stone or anything of this in nature. And, I think that perhaps we might point to Our Lady of Guadalupe or Our Lady of Las Lajas in Colombia, that image on the stone, or maybe Our Lady of Absam in Austria, as being some of these very rare occurrences where the Virgin Mary is said to have left her image. But there have been no cases just on a rock or a stone or a tree or anything like that the Catholic Church has ever said that this image is truly miraculous. We might chalk it up to this scientific phenomenon of a chiropoietic image or pareidolia, where the mind sees familiar patterns and they piece it together. And we say this looks like the Virgin Mary based on the shape or the color or the bend of the head or whatever it might be. There are ways that the brain might trigger to say that this does look like what we think to be an image of Mary. So I want to mention that there has been no such miracle ever approved by the Catholic Church. And whether or not you could get this story published in a religious TV channel, a blog, or a religious newspaper, that would be up to you to spread the word on your discovery. But thank you so much, Ahmed, for your question. And many people have similar questions and they email me. As far as spreading the word on the message, if it's meaningful to you, by all means, go ahead and do it. But we probably wouldn't see the Catholic Church investigating such a phenomenon. So thank you for your question. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. For this week, we've got Our Lady of the Arbor from Lille in France in the year 1234. And on today's date in the year 1234, 53 crippled people were cured upon praying before the statue of Our Lady of the Trellis, installed behind a latticework fence in St. Peter's Collegiate Church. In a procession held annually on the second Sunday after Pentecost commemorates these miracles. And saved during the destruction of St. Peter's Church in the French Revolution, the statue was removed later to St. Catherine's Church, and devotion to Our Lady of the Trellis revived in the mid-1800s, and a grand Neo-Gothic church arose in her honor, where the statue was installed in 1872 and canonically crowned in 1874. After the theft of the original in 1959, sculptor Marie-Madeleine Wertz carved the image now displayed in Lille's Catholic Cathedral, the Basilica of Notre Dame de Trille. And that is Our Lady of the Arbor from Lille in France in the year 1234. For more information on this fascinating devotion or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can go to 365dayswithmary.com, pick up the book, or download the free app 365 Days with Mary, Marian Calendar. Let's take a look at the miracle of the day. We do this every week where we talk about a miracle that has happened on some date in Christian history that lines up exactly to the day's date. And today is June 14th, and on this date, June 14th, in the year 1992, Isabella Manone, she suffered a near-fatal accident, and her recovery from this accident, she was completely and instantaneously healed, was deemed miraculous, and it was attributed to the intercession of Giuseppina Suriano. And this event later became the miracle that was used for Suriano's beatification in the year 2004. And that's today's miracle of the day. And each and every week, we'll be reporting on a different miracle that lines up exactly to the day's date. Let's take a look at the sainthood news. We do this every week as well, where we talk about people moving along the path to sainthood and the announcements that are made in Rome that talk about servants of God becoming venerables, venerables becoming blesseds, and blesseds becoming saints. We've been on a short delay now with the passing of Pope Francis, and now Pope Leo XIV is now taken over. And the first consistory under Pope Leo has taken place, and that ordinary consistory occurred on June 13th, in which the cardinals scheduled the canonizations for Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati and several others. And the canonization of Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati, an Italian Catholic activist who died in 1925 at the age of just 24, is set for August 3rd during the Jubilee of Youth. And as I mentioned before, I'll be going there on pilgrimage to attend that canonization. People can join at pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter. And this consistory also scheduled the canonizations of seven others, including Bartolo Longo, a satanic priest who converted to Catholicism, Peter Torot, a lay catechist martyred in Papua New Guinea in 1945, Ignazio Chocorale Maiolian, an Armenian Catholic Archbishop of Mardin, a martyr who died in 1916 during the Armenian genocide when he refused to embrace Islam, and Jose Gregorio Hernandez Cineros, a Venezuelan doctor who died in the year 1919. And that is today's sainthood news. Perhaps we'll be finding out some more announcements of saints coming soon. And the might-be saint of the day, we always look for somebody who's a blessed or a venerable or servant of God whose death anniversary or feast day lines up exactly on the day's date. And so for today's date, June 14th, the memorial is for Blessed Francisca de Paula de Jesus Isabel from Brazil in the year 1810 to 1895 is when she lived. She was born in São João del Rei in Minas Gerais in Brazil in 1810. She was a layperson of the Diocese of Campania in Brazil, and her mother died when she was 10, and she gave herself over to the care of the Blessed Virgin Mary. And she never learned to read or write. She never joined a congregation, but lived an impoverished, celibate life like a modern anchoress in Brazil, devoting all her time and effort to the construction of a church dedicated to Mary. And so she died in June 14th, 1895, in Brazil of natural causes, and she's entombed in the church that she helped to build. And the smell of perfume has been reported at her tomb at the time of her burial and again when it was opened in 1998. And she was declared venerable by Pope Benedict XVI on January 14th, 2011, and was beatified by Pope Francis on May 4th, 2013, celebrated by Cardinal Angelo Amato at the sanctuary there in Brazil. And that is today's might-be saint of the day, Blessed Francisca de Paula de Jesus Isabel from Brazil. And for people who want to check out my television series or my book, which is available at EWTNRC.com, you can go to EWTN to watch They Might Be Saints on June 25th at 10:30 p.m. Central Time. There's an episode on Bishop Alphonse Gallegos. He strolled the streets of Sacramento, saving souls by visiting families and mixing with lowriders in the Latino community. I profile the Bishop of the Barrios, Alphonse Gallegos, in that episode. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Dr. Matthew Bunsen about his brand new book, Leo XIV, Portrait of the First American Pope. Stay with us for that.
You're listening to EWTN Radio.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Well, of course, everybody around the world in the Catholic world has been buzzing over all this news about Pope Leo XIV, the first American pope. It's the biggest news we've seen in a long time. And I was in Rome for the recent Easter Triduum and the passing of Pope Francis. And I remember I went to a mass on one day while I was there after his passing. And the Filipino priests who were saying the mass, they came out to say hello to me afterwards. And they asked me where I was from, and I said, I'm from Chicago. And they said, did you know that the next pope is going to be from Chicago? And I said, no, there'll never be an American pope, and I don't think Cardinal Supich will be the choice for pope. There are others that they're looking at. And they said, no, it's this Cardinal Prevost. He's from Chicago. He was in Peru, and then he's in Rome, and he's the guy. And I thought, well, I suppose anything's possible, but that was the first I had ever heard his name. Then fast forward a week, and I was at Villanova University, and I was filming an episode of They Might Be Saints about Father Bill Atkinson, who is an Augustinian at Villanova. And at lunchtime, we all sat around, and the Augustinians there said, hey, did you know that the next pope is going to be from Villanova, an Augustinian? And I said, well, I've heard this name before. And lo and behold, I was pretty much the only person I knew who had ever heard of the name Robert Prevost. Well, we're so excited because there's a brand new book out called Leo XIV, Portrait of the First American Pope by EWTN's Dr. Matthew Bunsen. And we're so excited to have him on the show to talk all about Leo XIV. Thank you for being with us today, Dr. Bunsen.
Oh, it's a joy to be with you, and I love your show. So I'm very happy to be a guest.
It's great to have you here. And this was a big deal, of course, the first American Pope. And I made the comment of, I'd never thought I would see an American Pope, or there could never be an American Pope. And here we are. What was your reaction with the election of Pope Leo XIV?
Well, like you, that it was a name that slowly began to circulate in the days before the conclave. And when I would talk with various Vaticanisti and others in Rome, they would say, well, you know, this Cardinal Prevost is ideally suited for the papacy based on his skills, his temperament, his experience as a missionary, as an expert in canon law. But then they would finish always by saying, but of course he can't be elected because he's an American. And it turns out, of course, that the College of Cardinals is a lot smarter than conventional wisdom, because they decided that, no, it's not an insurmountable obstacle to elect somebody who happened to be born in Chicago, Illinois. Now, being from there and the family life and everything else is absolutely crucial to why they ended up deciding to elect him Pope. But it is so interesting to me that when we had an American Pope, it would be somebody who had been gone for many, many years. And at the end of the day, his being born in the United States just didn't matter to the college.
I suppose it was a bonus to have him from Peru, or having lived in Peru all those years. do you find that he, perhaps in your research on him, he is now more of a Peruvian Pope than an American Pope? How do you see that connection?
Yeah, I think he's the perfect combination of the two, and both of them find harmony in him. But having said that, I think it was very clear, even on the day of his election, where his heart is. It is in Peru. He served there for decades as a missionary, as an Augustinian. He was sent back by Pope Francis in 2014 and 2015 as the Bishop of Chiclayo in Peru. He was vice president of the Peruvian Episcopal Conference, but it's very clear that he has a deep love for Peru. And if we doubt that, consider that on the day that he came out on the loggia, having just been elected Pope, he spoke in three languages, Latin, Italian, and Spanish, and used the Spanish as a way of giving a salute, a shout out, so to speak, to his old diocese in Chiclayo. And the Peruvians consider him as much their representative, that he belongs to them as much as anyone, I think, in the United States could say he belongs to us. There is that mutual love on the part of Pope Leo and on the part of the Peruvian people for him.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Dr. Matthew Bunsen about the brand new book, Pope Leo XIV, The Portrait of the First American Pope. This is the very first biography that's been released out from EWTN Publishing, Sophia Institute Press, about the brand new book, brand new Pope. And I think for a lot of people, for the church in general, it's not a stretch to say this is a new era or a turning of the page with this new papacy, as all papacies are. And then perhaps there are some people who say that Pope Leo is somewhat of a continuation of Pope Francis, and some say he's a departure from Pope Francis. In these early days where we're learning so much, or learning bit by bit, we might say, and with your book, we would learn more. How would you assess the future when we look at Pope Leo XIV? Is he a continuation of Pope Francis, or is he something altogether different?
He's both. He made that very clear, really from the very beginning of his pontificate, that he is somebody who believes very firmly in continuity. And that means obvious continuity with Pope Francis. He quotes him. He has cited him. He quotes from Evangelii Gaudium, for example. He talks about Pope Francis, but then he also talks about his most immediate predecessors. He's talked about Benedict XVI. He's talked about John Paul II, Paul VI, and of course the Second Vatican Council. So he is somebody who is very self-aware of the fact that he is indeed the 266th successor to St. Peter. And he understands the importance of that line of continuity. Now, is that a rejection of Pope Francis? No, it is instead what he seeks to be, which is somebody who is very much concerned and taken up with the goal of unity in the life of the church. It's why he talks about unity and communion in so many of his homilies. And building those bridges between the factions that exist in the world, but at times also healing some of the divisions that have existed in the church for the last years. So I think all of those coming together demonstrate that he is an pope in the sense that you don't have to choose. It's not a question of Benedict or Francis or John Paul II or Francis. He sees himself faithful to all of them.
Beautiful. That's a great reflection. We're talking today with Dr. Matthew Bunsen about Pope Leo XIV. And one of the things that I noticed early, he mentioned Our Lady of the Rosary of Pompeii in his first address there. And of course, he went to Genizano to see Our Lady of Good Counsel, which is an icon that's connected with the Augustinians. Talk a little bit about the Marian devotion that we've seen in Pope Leo XIV.
Yeah, it's somewhat underreported or perhaps underappreciated that he has an abiding love for Our Lady. As we saw, as you noted, that's exactly right, Michael. He went out to Genizano, where you have this beautiful image of Our Lady of Good Counsel. And the fact that he has this deep Marian devotion, we need to look no further than his papal coat of arms. And it's a coat of arms that he was also, that he created for himself when he became a bishop. And it's in two parts, basically. It's on the bottom right is a symbol of the Augustinian order, which is a flame, a heart of flame pierced by an arrow resting upon a book. So it's the fervor of our love pierced by the truth, by the love of Christ, and then resting on the Word of God. But in the upper left side is a simple fleur-de-lis, and that is one of the great traditional symbols of the Blessed Mother. Of the purity of the Blessed Mother. So he has emblazoned on his own coat of arms, and now it's going everywhere that you see, anywhere that his coat of arms will be, his love for the Blessed Mother. So I think we're going to see over the coming months and years that devotion really coming even more and more to the fore as he settles in and as he takes part in some of these great Marian feasts and solemnities.
Wonderful. And of course, being an Augustinian, he's clearly has an affection for St. Augustine and his teachings. Talk a little bit about his devotion to the saints, his connection to the saints that he brings into this papacy.
Well, he said on the day of his election, I am a son of Augustine. And if you go back and you look at his homilies and his speeches, he quotes Augustine extensively in almost every major address that he's given. And he pulls some of these great quotes, for example, our hearts are restless until they rest in you, for example. But it's beyond that even. You can see that he is very much somebody who belongs to the Augustinian tradition. He is a member of the Order of St. Augustine and a great devotee of the rule of Augustine. He's been with the Augustinians for 55 years, so that matters too. But what does that mean? It means that, like a true Augustinian, he is somebody who loves community. He prizes hospitality and friendships. He has maintained those friendships even in the days after his election. He went back and met with the Augustinians who were friends of his, so you can see that sense of community in him. But then there's also, as he himself has said over the years, there are some beautiful reflections that on film with him. He talks about Augustine's great search for the truth. But once you find the truth, it is you are filled with the love of God. And when you have the love of God, you are impelled then to the love of neighbor. So it is this idea of conversion. It is this idea of love that we then have to carry forward, which I think is one of the reasons why he has been such a skilled missionary in proclaiming that love. But it is deeply rooted in St. Augustine.
Wonderful. And as we wrap up the interview today, I encourage people to pick up this new book, Pope Leo XIV, Portrait of the First American Pope. We've been speaking with the author, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, about this new book. What is your hope for people, the people who are excited, people who are scared, people who are nervous, who people just want to know more about this new pope? What can you encourage them with your book to find out more?
Yeah, I think our goal with the book, we call it a portrait, is to get to know him a little, to understand his life, his influences, and where he may be taking us. But let's stay focused on his very first words as Pope, and that was, peace be with you. but it's the peace that we can only find in the risen Christ. And Pope Leo very clearly wants us to be one. He wants us to be unified. And let's pray for him, let's pray for each other, and let's work for that unity.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, for joining us on today's program.
Great to be with you.
Thank you. That was Dr. Matthew Bunsen. Check out his new book, Leo XIV, Portrait of the First American Pope. This is the very first biography of the Pope that's out there. That's a great one. I bought it myself as a Father's Day gift, and I encourage you to do the same. You can go to ewtnrc.com to pick this one up. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio. Check out the audio archives or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, talking about his brand new book, Leo XIV, Portrait of the First American Pope, and Father Tom Givens, the executive producer of Fighting Spirit, a film about Father Emil Capon. Check out my series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, each week on Saturdays, Saturday, June 14th at 5 p.m. Central Time. I look at the miraculous apparition of Our Lady of Walsingham, who revealed plans for the Holy Family's house in Nazareth to a Catholic English noblewoman. And check out my Jubilee Year pilgrimage to Milan, Turin, Florence, and Rome, July 28th through August 4th. We always do, we'll be going to places of saints and miracles. We'll be visiting the Duomo in Milan. We'll visit Turin to see the Cathedral of St. John the Baptist, where the Shroud of Turin is held. Walk in the footsteps of Pier Giorgio Frassati and see the place where St. John Bosco had his famous visions. We'll continue to Genoa to see the apparition site of Our Lady of the Guard and go to Lucca to see the shrine of St. Gemma Galgani, the great miracle worker. We'll go to see the David in Florence and also the site where Mary appeared to the seven holy founders of the Servites. We'll finish up in Rome to see the incredible sites around the Vatican, the holy doors, and finish with the canonization of the great modern saints will be Saint Pier Giorgio Frassati. Find out more, sign up at pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter. And I'd like to thank you today for joining me on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.